This episode was conceived and recorded on a Miskwetchi-Waskahican, Beaver Hills House, Treaty 6 territory. Welcome to the Power Plant Sessions, the research security podcast produced by the Safeguarding Research Office at the University of Alberta. The Power Plant Sessions are recorded in the North Power Plant, a historic campus building that is now the home of the Safeguarding Research Office, the support unit dedicated to safeguarding research and innovation at the U of A.
This is Jacqueline Littlewood, host of the Power Plant Sessions. On this episode, we focused on communities of practice for research security at the national, provincial, and international level, and the role these play in capacity building and safeguarding the research ecosystem. Our panel of experts for the show includes Justin Nankeville, Paul Jarrett, and Martha Wallace. Each of these expert individuals have played a critical role in establishing and advancing research security communities of practice in Canada. I hope you enjoy the episode, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Power Plant Sessions. Thanks so much for making the time for us today. Can I ask each of you to introduce yourselves as you feel appropriate, including your role as a builder and supporter of communities of practice? Justin, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, delighted to be here. I'm the Director of Research Security at the University of Waterloo. I want to say, I think at the foreground here, very happy to be part of the Power Plant Sessions, very cutting edge mod title. Some natural alignment, I was thinking, with reference to dual use technology. So that's a little research security inside joke for all those around. My role related to communities of practice and how we build support really, I think, has two dimensions, which we can get into as we go. The first is really practical in the sense that Paul, for example, at the University of Toronto and I, we're trying to move the communities of practice together, the research security communities together in Ontario. We have a dedicated community of practice there. All schools are involved, small, medium, and large. And really to understand and grapple with this file, with the overarching objective to really achieve compliance on the regulatory side. But also, I would say, you know, in terms of thinking about how we build and support these things, there's a conceptual dimension that I think is important here that we should tease out over the course of this debate. And that's the range of stakeholders involved with these communities as well. We have three big distinctive communities that need to be brought together in everything we do in very unique and strategic ways. They are first and foremost a community of academia with key norms of open science, academic freedom, freedom of academic partnerships, unregulated rules of scientific collaboration, very decentralized academic systems of governance, which matter. We have the community of government, which in and of itself is creating scientific funding mechanisms guided by regulatory rules to structure these relationships within academia. And the community, frankly, of commercialization that is involved in the private sector, of industry and private sector partnerships, which has its own incentivization processes for commercialization, for economic benefit. And I think the bottom line for us is that these communities with different objectives, incentives, and approaches to the issue of research security need to be brought together and into alignment to have productive dialogue. So by way of background, I come from academia. I was a professor for a long time in international law and international security, for some time in Canada and the US. I worked for governments across North America and did a lot of work in Asia. So I see both sides of this equation from these community perspectives.
Thanks very much, Justin. And thanks also for situating us and providing that context. I think that's going to be really helpful for our conversation. Paul, over to you.
Thanks so much, Jacqueline. And I echo Justin in thanking you for hosting this. This is excellent. And I'm really happy to be here with the three of you. Justin and Martha and I were some of the first in Canada to do this role. So by way of background, I'm Paul Jarrett, the Director of Research Security at the University of Toronto. And at the University of Toronto, we found that communities of practice and collaborating and working with other universities and institutions has been of the utmost importance in this area of research security. And we found that this is something that no university or institution can or should do alone. And working together in common manners and fashions has definitely improved not only the activities at the University of Toronto, but we've seen development across the country and across the world in this area fairly rapidly. So I think that's been an excellent part of the community building, sharing and exchanging knowledge and best practices and learning from one another from diverse experiences and backgrounds. It's been excellent. So again, thank you for inviting us on this excellent topic.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. And I couldn't agree more in terms of the value that these communities of practice have served and will continue to serve. Martha, over to you, last but not least, for introductions.
Thanks, Jacqueline, to you and your team for putting this podcast together and inviting us. It's fun to be together with these esteemed colleagues today to talk about how it started really small with three of us and then it's built this bigger thing. First of all, I'll just start off by introducing myself and how the Research Security Division is situated in the University of Calgary. We are embedded within the Research Services Office because we wanted to enable close collaborations with the grants team and provide comprehensive support for researchers throughout the entire life cycle of the grant cycle, including compliance. I personally joined the university in December 2022 as director after having spent over 20 years in the federal government, where I worked with leaders in academia, government, and industry to develop innovation and research security policies and programs, including safeguarding your research portal. Now I'm on the other side trying to see how this all fits into the academia. Realizing we can't do this in silo, we build relationships and have champions across the university that support the research enterprise. We do a variety of things at the University of Calgary to help researchers understand and comply with the new federal and international requirements. Some of the services we provide include advice on expert controls and sanctions, creating entity reporting, providing travel and security briefings, and looking at lab security. We work collaboratively with various business units because we know it's so important to take this on seriously to protect our institution. For example, we work with IT and legal in putting forward mandatory training and developing loaner device program. Education and outreach is the pillar of our program, and we try to meet our researchers where they're at and find the best ways to support them in their research journey. And I will speak later on about the Alberta Community of Practice and how that came to fruition.
Perfect. Thanks for that introduction to yourself and your team and your role, Martha, and some of the amazing things you've done. I wonder, Justin touched on the fact that we need to support and have within our communities of practice institutions of all different sizes and types, as well as the broader research community, which extends beyond academia. So I wonder, maybe Martha, we'll start with you. What have you heard from other institutions that might not have the same resourcing as the three of us at our institutions and the same capacity for research security? What are you hearing from them about the value of a community of practice?
Okay, thanks, Jacqueline. Yeah, recognizing that we're only as strong as our weakest link here in Alberta, we realized how important it was to work together as a community of universities and with colleges. As you mentioned, smaller universities did not receive any funding or much at all. So with the support of University of Alberta, we have established a community of practice where we could build up competencies and capacity on identifying and mitigating risks together, sharing resources amongst institutions across Alberta. I actually chair the Alberta Research Security Community Practice, and Jacqueline, you're the secretariat. We currently have 17 members from across different colleges and universities across our great province, and developing a supportive community is so essential. Although research security isn't new, it is for many folks in the academic context, so collaborating with our colleagues is key to supporting each other with establishing best practices and developing resources that can be shared with Alberta PSI community. I want to zoom out for a second on that to cover some background about how the Alberta Community of Practice came about. It's important to note that this wasn't a project that we proposed to post-secondary education community, rather that the COP was identified as a need after having the Research Security Conference in Calgary. The small and medium-sized universities came to us saying, we need a voice, we need to be heard, we need to work together. So in advance of that conference, we had small institutions join together to talk about what their needs were. And from that, these discussions, what was identified was that community practice was their top priority. The thinking at the time was that by creating a community practice, we could provide support for smaller universities that don't have these resources. Although this community practice is relatively new, we have tried to professionalize it with terms of references, a sharing portal, and regular meetings. I think together, our initiatives have already strengthened the research security posture in Alberta. One of the first priorities was to provide training to the community on open source due diligence and risk assessment. We held two in-person sessions last January, one in Edmonton, one in Calgary, where members learned the basics of identifying risks associated with research security partnerships. The connections and relationships built with these hands-on workshops with colleagues across the province was super beneficial. We try to meet in person once a year, and otherwise we have monthly meetings with guest speakers that and topics that are most important to the membership itself. This is, again, a great way to facilitate continuous learning and remain agile and informed of the ever-evolving emerging topics and policy requirements. We also hosted a two-day workshop in Edmonton last year, again, based on the voice of the membership on the needs that they have, which would include things like cybersecurity training and how to better safeguard sensitive technology and AI research. And again, we're planning another in-person workshop for this June. So developing and sharing resources was really crucial to this community of practice. I like to say that while research is competitive, research security shouldn't be. The feedback I received from members of this community of practice goes a long way towards leveling the playing field so that PSIs that didn't receive the same level of funding as places like UCalgary, UAlberta, et cetera, were able to implement some of these best practices. I expect that the community of practice will also help to amplify our collective voices when it comes to advocating for adequate resources from the government.
Thanks, Martha. And thanks for that in-depth look at how the Alberta Research Security Community of Practice has been structured and some of the contributions that you've been able to make there. So I'm turning it now over to Justin or Paul to see if they have any additional information or insights that they'd like to share from their Ontario perspective. Just jump in if Paul's the one who wants to go next. Go for it, Paul.
I'll go ahead. Justin actually chairs the Ontario Community of Practice through OCR, the Ontario University Group. I assist him and co-chair that community of practice for the province that has all of the universities in Ontario. And we meet monthly to discuss updates both from the federal level and the provincial level and provide best practices and information that we've all gathered. It's a very interesting group because just like Alberta, Ontario has universities small and large with diverse sets of skills and needs. And again, I find these meetings very interesting and important, especially because everyone is bringing something different to the table, learning from people's experiences and perspectives in research security has definitely helped not only my program, but we help each other moving through these ever-evolving requirements. And each university has a unique system and way of governance and process as well. And a lot of those systems can be adapted fairly easily between universities, especially in research security, as we're developing these best practices. And Justin's been a really good leader in this area for Ontario, working quite closely with the Ontario government to ensure that all the knowledge and new requirements coming down are spread throughout the Ontario community.
Thanks, Paul. Justin, did you have anything you wanted to add to that from your role in OCR?
Sure. Yeah. And before even getting into that, and, you know, we appreciate the range of different capabilities and capacities that schools have right now. And I think maybe it's worth just stepping back for a sec just to talk about, you know, the complex environment within which we're doing this type of work with communities. So to the point of, you know, how do we think about the discipline and practice of research security today? I think it's worth noting really how important and how new and how vast the types of issues are that are associated with what we're doing. So for example, you know, really we've got ever expanding terrains of information that need to be analyzed in research security departments and universities. And really you could sort of see the content and the subject matter as subdisciplines, frankly, of international relations, global governance. In other words, we have to be able to understand, for example, foreign policy orientations around security-based relationships, what alliances and defense partnerships look like. We need to understand international governance frameworks, and so we can think here of, you know, what is the G7 doing collectively on research security? What are like-minded states doing with domestic rules, and how are they guiding these relationships? We have an enormous focus on economic security considerations. In other words, which areas of scientific research are considered sensitive, and need to be protected and promoted by governments to ensure they're developed in domestic and favorable international settings. And here, as people know, in terms of federal and provincial focus in Ontario and beyond, the role of critical infrastructure and critical minerals, and which international partnerships carry risks in these particular areas. We also have to understand now domestic industrial policy, not only in Canada, but in beyond. In other words, which industries are governments promoting through investment and protection in terms of semiconductors, for example, quantum, battery technology as well. International institutional partnerships. How do we think about foreign academic institutions abroad? What is their relationship to, in particular, military policy and the development of sensitive technologies? How do we think about researcher responsibility to understand and, for example, steer that process? And so my overarching point here is there's a lot to try and understand and try and put together and allow research security to guide researchers to make good decisions and allow universities to make good decisions and to guide where governments are going. These are where the communities now sit. And all of these communities, again, between government, industry, and academia need to interact. And communities of practice within structured university and college-based systems are absolutely indispensable, given the difficulty of trying to understand all of those variables and the types of background required to do all of that. So I give you that sort of by way of background. It's a fascinating time to be looking at all of these things. It's really important for all of the schools and obviously for governments to get all of this right. There's a lot at stake in this area in terms of, you know, university reputations, retaining talent, making sure we have regulatory rules in place, making sure that systems continue to flow and researchers can continue to acquire funding and work collaboratively in certain areas. So there's just an awful lot that needs to be thought through as we maintain these communities of practice. In Ontario, we have a relatively, I'd say, advanced state of affairs related to research security. It's been advanced in a great many ways over the last couple of years. It includes a lot more, I would say, in terms of its evaluation and criteria and variables than the formal government, Government of Canada policy in terms of STRAC and the National Security Guidelines for Research Partnerships. So for Ontario and for the community of practice, we need to assess how in particular to think about risk that's contained not only in the STRAC policy and the NRO list and the sensitive technologies list, but other types of relationships or other types of institutional relationships abroad that might also contain risk. And what that does, therefore, is sort of expand the subset of institutions that we as research security departments need to look at. Ontario uses, for example, different mechanisms and materials to assess risk. So, for example, the ASPE defense tracker is used. We have sanctions list. We look for state key labs in certain areas. And part of also, you know, which is consistent, I think, across Canada here, is that our core areas of concern remain the same. And that is how to think about foreign military capability and capacity being built or developed, in this case, with Ontario research dollars that might harm Canadian and, in this case, Ontarian interests. And we ask, frankly, fairly straightforward questions. Are Ontario researchers directly or indirectly contributing to the advancement of military or security-based dual-use technologies? Do the outputs of these types of research advance surveillance-based technologies or harm vulnerable populations or create the conditions to contribute to negative effects in human rights situations or abuses? So all of these sort of common threads are woven through a lot of the debates that we have. We also have a lot of different scientific-based domains that we need to think through and how we think about, you know, incentivizing researchers in our debates to understand the nature of their science and where it's going and how it actually interacts in the world is very important. In terms of, you know, practical steps that Ontario's taken, as I mentioned, we create fairly sophisticated mitigation plans that for the purposes of Ontario grants will bind the applicant throughout the life of the project. Collaborations are very important. We look at collaborations over the past 2 years when people are applying for funding. There is attestation processes in Ontario for all named researchers. And so with all of this in mind, again, the necessity of communities of practice is important because we want to consolidate understandings with all of these various schools. Those are important that we can share best practices within the communities and allow those capabilities to be built up. And again, with the overarching approach here is that we can actually ensure that compliance within universities for research security is being achieved. And, you know, to that end, and I'll end here, we go to great lengths to ensure that schools have capabilities to do due diligence. And again, with some of these schools, they have, you know, one person who is running the research security program. Some have analysts. And so therefore, for the University of Toronto and the University of Waterloo in particular, you know, we try and put together seminars that allow external people to come in so we can train everybody on what due diligence requires, what best practices look like, and in that way, burden share across the school system in Ontario, but allow the fundamental tenets of what's required to tackle these subjects be spread throughout and create community engagement so we can talk all of this through collectively.
Thanks very much, Justin. And I think You've really highlighted the complexity of the situation that really underscores the need for the community of practice. I'm not sure that those maybe less familiar with research security will have fully appreciated all those interconnecting aspects that we are facing in our offices. So I appreciate that, as well as the insight into the Ontario approach and the Ontario requirements, which I think will also be beneficial for some of our listeners outside of the Ontario context. I wonder if we can move now from the sort of provincial level to the national level. And I'd like to turn to Paul as the inaugural chair of the what's known as colloquially as Team Canada, the national level community of practice for research security. We've talked about how beneficial communities of practice are, but they're not easy to build either, right? And so I wonder if you can touch on that a bit and like some of the challenges that you had in building, advancing the community of practice, and maybe some thoughts on the future as well.
Thanks, Jacqueline. Justin and Martha's points, at the provincial level, we now have what's known as Team Canada. And that actually started with a call between Justin, Martha, and I. We started with an ad hoc call, and then it became a biweekly or monthly call. As other universities in Canada started to build their research security programs and recognize the growing need to have expertise in research security, other universities were added to the call. Also, as Public Safety Canada, the Research Security Center, came in to be, they also had their regional advisors recommend to universities to have folks from those universities join the Team Canada call. So it's slowly built from the three of us to what is now, I believe, 66 university institutions on Team Canada. So building that has been really interesting and a lot of fun. At the same time, I was also building two other parallel communities of practice. One, I took over a pre-existing research security community of practice with the Toronto Academic Health Science Network. So that's all of the research hospitals in the Greater Toronto area, especially with those who have an affiliation with the University of Toronto. And parallel, a community of practice with outside third-party research institutions and incubators, such as CIFAR, MARS, Vector Institute, Fields Institute, Triumph, etc. So there are three communities of practice being built sort of at the same time. One of the challenges, it's a lot of work. And I'm very fortunate to have a great team backing this kind of work and supporting. Without them, none of these communities of practice, especially Team Canada, wouldn't have been able to go forward. And then on the other side, I have an excellent senior leadership cadre at the University of Toronto who's very supportive of these kinds of interactions with our university colleagues and our hospital and institutional colleagues. They really provided the support and the effort to allow some of these things to go forward. So having support has been quite important in this area. Team Canada went from, as I said, from the call of the three of us to recently having elections, and where our colleague from Akshay from the University of British Columbia is now the new chair, and Hobie from Laval is the new support officer. We'll be having further elections to create a full executive team, and I've moved to the past chair. Some of the main difficulties were in that transitional period. I realized that I no longer had the capacity to do what I was doing and to move it forward. The growth period necessitated that we needed to democratize and have many voices moving this community forward to address the needs, and understanding those needs became much more important. So we created an executive committee to try to figure out how to democratize properly. There are a lot of various opinions on how that should look, and balancing very sort of different opinions and folks who are quite passionate about this was quite difficult to move it forward, but I'm glad we came to a consensus to go forward. So that's probably the largest challenge, but the biggest reward is actually seeing it grow and move beyond what we initially created here in sort of in this virtual room. So I'm really kind of proud to see it move and grow wings and really support the Canadian community.
Thanks, Paul. And thanks to all three of you. I think that those of us working in this space really couldn't do what we do without these communities of practice. And so we really appreciate all the effort that each of you have put into them. If we take it to an even different level now, which is the international level, I mean, Justin, you touched on some of the international activities happening in the research security space. And I know that each of you have had the chance to build some international contacts in this area. I wonder if you can tell us about those interactions and what you've taken away from those and where you see research security going at the international level. Martha, maybe I'll start with you.
Okay, thanks, Jacqueline. Everyone has a role to play. Everyone can make a difference. And we have to remember to stay agile, to listen, and to share. It's so important that we do that and we listen to our members because we all do have unique challenges and we got to tackle this together. And that also leads us into the international realm. I think it's really important when building up teams to learn from each other and to stay abreast with what's happening around the world. There's no one size fits all, but learning what works and why can help us all do our jobs a lot better. I'm really grateful for the opportunities I've had to engage with my international colleagues on research security issues facing Canada, as well as many other countries around the world. Research partnerships are increasingly international in scope, and there's great value engaging with our like-minded partners to share these priorities and learn from different approaches to safeguarding research. One thing I've come to appreciate more as I engage with my international colleagues is that research security programs need to look different from country to country due to the differences in institutions and academic culture. For instance, my German colleagues approach research security differently, with academic freedom being constitutionally protected in their basic law. That is going to look a lot different in Canada or the UK, which have different legal norms and ways of approaching research security. While our processes may differ, our goals remain the same, which is to support research that is open as possible and as closed as necessary. In our current geopolitical climate, it's more important than ever to engage with our allies to develop shared approaches to confronting common threats. For this reason, we in Canada need to remain informed on research security requirements of our allies, as well as the requirements here in Canada. This can't be done without continuous engagement and relationship building to intentionally expand our regional and national communities of practice. Only then can a genuine community of practice emerge on the international scene. I think that the outlines of an international community of practice already exist, such as the G7 Forum on Research Security. There is already a G7 data sharing platform hosting international resources. This could easily serve as a foundation for communities of practice if we could just build up our relationship with our academic partners through an online forum, or perhaps imagine, and maybe I'm being too idealistic here, an in-person workshop. With Canada's upcoming G7 presidency, the idea isn't completely outside the realm of possibility. What's needed for such an internal community practice to become a reality is the team-building collaborations that we've been essential for building up here in Alberta and across Canada.
Thanks, Martha. Some really exciting ideas to explore there. Paul, did you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, thanks, Martha. To build on what Martha's saying, I've had significant engagements in Japan, Australia, Germany, the Netherlands, and Denmark, amongst others. Japan has seen what Canada has done in the area of Team Canada and community of practice. And I was there this January, and they have launched a Team Japan parallel to Team Canada. So they're starting to realize that each individual university can't do research security on its own. And Team Japan is coming ahead of a lot of guidelines from the government of Japan. The government of Japan is still building their process and building their guidelines. But Team Japan sees that research security is now something that will be needed in research partnerships going forward. That's one of my main messages when working with international partners, is that research security is a support mechanism for research and for international collaboration. The goal of research security on its own is not really anything. It is to support and continue these important collaborations that we have with our global partners. The Netherlands, both their universities and their governments, are quite far ahead in research security. The Knowledge Contact Point is a really unique Dutch invention combining all the government agencies together to advise their university research communities. And now we're watching the development of the Secure Center in the US, and we have high hopes that that will be a single point of contact for a lot of information on research security. So understanding the dynamics in our normal partners is going to be increasingly important going forward to support our researchers to continue the great collaborations and research that they're already doing.
Thanks, Paul. And thanks for sharing those really interesting insights into some of the partners that you've been working with. Justin, do you have anything else that you wanted to add on that international piece?
Yeah, very quickly. And I echo everything that's been said here. I think it almost goes without saying that having rich international and comparative approaches to measure our own success and our own suite of regulations is really important. And ultimately, it's fascinating to hear how debates across Europe, within the United States, in Australia, Japan, et cetera, Southeast Asia, China, and beyond, are unfolding. I think that what's really novel in a, you know, in a most systemic sense here is that we have common and differentiated frameworks emerging. In other words, there's general agreement that research security does matter and must matter to researchers, to institutions, to the development of sensitive technology, to how we think about armed conflict and the role of science potentially in shaping all of that. But there's real novelty in differentiated frameworks. In other words, how different states are actually constructing what they deem to be important and worthy of protection, and how far they want to some extent, extend their reach into academic freedom domains, and to some extent, again, sort of, you know, merge and quell some of the autonomy that schools do have, is an important debate, because academic freedom matters in different ways across borders and continent. As Martha mentioned, you know, what is considered academic freedom in terms of legal protections is different in Germany than we would see in other states. And so how those debates unfold and the nuance within which a lot of that can be said to be a productive debate between universities and governments in different countries is very helpful for us in Canada to see and guide what we're doing. States have different relationships too. For example, you know, we are all going to have different relationships with the United States to some extent, with China to some extent, and that matters in terms of how we shape and reflect upon what our research security concerns are. Furthermore, we're all going to have different ideas about what mitigation might mean for certain researchers, how we think about what universities are willing to mitigate against, what those mitigation plans and processes look like. And so, again, the overall wealth of actually having a comparative approach, particularly, I think, as we've all stressed, that we're in the very, very early stages of understanding where research security is going, how it fits into university systems, the incentivization process in thinking about the cultivation of talent and making sure that it continues to augment scientific and research development and pushes along open science. These are big, important questions we must look at internationally.
Perfect. Thanks. I think we'll leave it there. So thank you to all of you for taking the time to be part of this podcast with us today and sharing your really unique and valuable expertise. Thanks also for the contributions that all three of you have made individually and collectively to research security in Canada. Thanks for listening to the Power Plant Sessions, our bi-monthly research security podcast. We'll be back with another great episode on June 10th. There are also two important research security community of practice meetings happening in June. From June 3rd to 4th, the University of British Columbia will be hosting a national research security conference. And from June 19th to 20th, the Alberta Research Security Community of Practice will meet in Calgary. You can find more information on these events in our show notes.
This episode of the Power Plant Sessions was hosted by Jacqueline Littlewood and produced by Rachel Zakuski-Pezum and Andres Alvarez. Jeff Simon created our music, and Renee Hart designed our show art. You can find the Power Plant Sessions on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, spread the word, and safeguard your research.